From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. We're pleased to welcome in Deacon Kevin Staskow. Deacon, good day to you.
Good day to you, Bob. How are you?
Doing wonderfully well here. Just we try to conquer this pandemic, sheltering in place with four teenagers.
Well, there you go.
As Bishop there Soto said to me, he said, "Have you heard of St. Jude?"
Long causes, huh?
Yes, indeed. How are you and your family?
We are doing well, you know, just getting by.
Yeah.
You know, been working out of the home for a while. My kids are in Catholic school, so they've been in in-person school, so that's been good.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just life is different, a little less hectic. But we're getting by okay. We're blessed.
Very good. Yeah, you know, this pandemic has hit so many people so differently, you know, and like you say, some of us are, yeah, we're getting by, we're okay, you know, it's kind of become the new normal and things are going along, and yet other people have been completely devastated by this. I mean, really, truly devastated. And it's almost like there's two worlds out there right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, you know, hopefully the COVID relief package that was passed will help people that are suffering. And, you know, it seems to be the most economic benefit is for those at the lower end of the economic scale. So I think that's really good. And, you know, we do what we can. You know, and again, hopefully parishes are taking this time seriously because there's a lot of need out there, right? A need for people to reach out and check in on others, you know, and certainly a need for, you know, food and help with rent and all those things as well. But I do also think there's a lot of people just feeling, you know, generally isolated and cut off from their usual activities for over a year, right? Although maybe we've all, you know, a lot of people I'm sure have new routines, and you know, I think coming out of, you know, as we start to, you know, as more and more of us are vaccinated and life can get back to quote unquote normal, I think, you know, people's behavior patterns in a year, I think, shift and change, right?
Yeah, well, they have most definitely, and I think you really hit it on the head. Is, yeah, people, a lot of people need, you know, rent assistance and food assistance and things like that, and hopefully, but you know, the new stimulus will help that. But you know, our Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services, Catholic Charities, St. Vincent de Paul, Knights of Columbus, on and on and on and on and on. All these great people are taxed to the max right now, and nobody's screaming, nobody's complaining. They're all just out there doing the Lord's work. And but I think even more so, like you point out, there are a lot of people that have been leading sort of lonely lives, let's say, and now just complete isolation. I saw one woman today on the TV, her doctor, after giving her her second shot, wrote her a prescription to hug her granddaughter. And she hadn't hugged her granddaughter in a year.
Yeah, wow. Well, here I know I have an aunt who was in a facility, in a nursing home facility, and for several months they were completely locked down. She wasn't allowed to leave at all. My cousin was bringing her food and on the back porch, you know, and because she couldn't go in through the front door.
Right.
She wasn't allowed to go into the facility at all. So she would leave her food on her back porch, you know, and they'd talk, you know, she'd talk to her a little bit, you know, through the back sliding glass door or whatever of the nursing home. But yeah, they just completely locked down in there. And you know, they're in a bubble, so they were able to, the people who lived there, they had different activities for them eventually, but there was a period there for several months where they had nothing. They were just in their room.
You know? Yeah, I've heard from a number of people in several of the nursing homes where I live, because I work for a newspaper, saying you need to write about this. You need to talk about this. We're locked down here. We used to, get on the bus and we'd go to the zoo, or we'd go, to Tahoe, or we'd go for a hike. He says we have no activities, nothing. Yeah. Playing bingo maybe, but no going on excursions and that they really look forward to, just to get out and out and about. And you're right, they were on such complete lockdown because they were certainly the highest risk, and we saw a tremendous amount of COVID and death at the nursing homes. It would seemingly just sweep through and hit almost everybody.
Yeah. And very vulnerable population, right?
Yeah. And we saw that with a lot of our elderly nuns that were, in congregate living and the same thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, this period in our history is going to have a major effect, because of the people that we've lost. But I think also because of, it's going to affect us psychologically. It's going to, affect our culture in so many different ways, and obviously affect our church. We've struggled to, kind of keep ministries going, and we've struggled to continue reaching out when everything changed, so suddenly. And we're just not used to dealing with that. I mean, especially the church, right? We're,
yep.
We change very slowly. We move very slowly as a church. And so hopefully we're able to, continue to pivot, because the reality is going to be even, it's not, people talk about going back to normal. I think the culture is going to be changed. I think people are going to look, look to churches and look to their time and look to activities and look at all these things a little differently. And are we able to adapt to that? And are we able to be hospitable and welcome people back? I know we're worried people won't come back, but I think, they definitely won't come back if we don't really make a good effort, to welcome them, make sure the doors are opened, really to reach out to them personally.
Yeah, I think that especially, people who may have been new to the parish, or maybe, I hate to use the term, maybe they were lukewarm Catholics and maybe we're just getting a foothold and now they haven't been to Mass for a year and just kind of, well, I don't know if I'll go back or not. That kind of slip away, and we sure hope that doesn't happen. I know there are a whole lot of other people that are ready to go back like gangbusters and have missed every part of our faith. But there are some, we may see fade away, and we don't want to let that happen.
Yeah, I think it's really important, right? It's really important that we, that we offer, that the churches open up and welcome the people back that are usually there. I think it's also an opportunity for us to really, look at, who's not there, who wasn't there before, and who still isn't there, and how do we really actively reach out to them, and how do we offer things that'll be attractive for those people coming out of COVID, right? I mean, are we offering, opportunities for, for people to kind of reflect on this time in our history, right? And try to pray and try to understand and reflect on what it means, what God is trying to communicate to us during this time.
Yeah.
What it means for us personally, but what it means for our culture, our society, our church, why did God allow this to happen, right? I'm sure there's a lot of people asking that, like, what is the lesson in this, right? And so, I've been trying to focus my team on silver linings. Let's find some silver linings during this time, right? But I also think we don't want to just look to the good. We also want to look at what this time has revealed about, where we're flawed as a church, where we're flawed as parishes, where we're flawed as individually. And, it's Lent, right? We're called to repent. Some people think Lent didn't end the whole year, but, we started in Lent. We're still in Lent, right? But it's that idea of, how are we repenting, and how are we trying every day to do things better, practice our faith in a more authentic and real way, And I think that if we want to practice our discipleship, this is a really good time to do it because there's a lot of need out there.
Yeah, and I hope too that maybe, because people say, I just want to be able to walk around the block. I just want to be able to go to the park and have a picnic. I hope that that sentiment overtake, and I want to go back to Mass, and I want to be singing the hymns with all my fellow parishioners and praying together with them and walking down the aisle to Holy Communion and not being afraid and not having to wear a mask and everything else, although the mask to me is just a real minor thing. It's not an annoyance at all. I've gotten very used to it. But as opposed to, I can't wait to go to the Golden One and go to a concert, or I can't wait to go to the Super Bowl, or I can't wait to do all these kinds of things, and which are fine to do, but I'm hoping that maybe some of the simpler things in life that we're craving right now will, helping your neighbors, having a backyard barbecue with the neighbor across the street that's been there 3 years and you don't even know their first name.
And I do think, as it becomes safer to do so, as people get vaccinated, et cetera, I think people are going to, want to naturally come back to church, naturally come back to those gatherings and friendships and relationships that have, in some ways been strained during this time. And I do think that's going to happen. And I think we need to consider, as disciples of Jesus, what's our role in this? What are we called to as far as our ministry and our discipleship? And how can we, what good news do we have to share? Because if we don't have any good news to share, there's not a lot. We're in trouble, right? Yeah. I think coming out of this pandemic, we need to have the good news ready to share. And we need to find effective ways to do that. And I think where we fail as a church and where we fail as individual disciples is not sharing it or not sharing it effectively in a way that makes sense, right? But, sometimes I think as a church we seem out of touch, right? We're not connected to the culture enough to be able to properly communicate the message of, the message of mercy and love and compassion that Jesus is offering at this time.
Yeah, and I know, you've dedicated your life to the church, both, professionally, but as a deacon as well. But I sense in our society now, people are hesitant to talk about their faith. Almost like it's off limits. It's like, okay, that's okay for you, but don't be twisting my arm. Don't trying to, convert me. Whereas if we were talking about a new restaurant in town and we thought it was good, we'd tell the whole world.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the sad part about it, right? I mean, if we're really disciples and our faith and our relationship with Jesus and the church are central to who we are, we naturally would talk about it all the time, yeah. Right? And maybe that's partly cultural. It's not polite and in public to talk about your religious beliefs in some ways, but I think that's the piece. I mean, we need to be open to taking that risk. Sad to say that talking about your faith is a risk in our culture, but obviously it is, right? Mm-hmm. So it's that idea of if we make that central to who we are, we shouldn't be ashamed of talking about it. We shouldn't be ashamed of Again, I do believe there's an opportunity to do that right now, because I think a lot of people are asking questions about, why would God let this happen, right?
Oh, yeah.
We kind of have to have an answer for that, right? I mean, I don't know if I have a short answer to that, but that's a great opening for a discussion about, what does this mean? How does God interact with, humanity, and when these crises happen, what is God's role in that? Does He allow that? Is it His intention? That's the big question. I think people are asking a lot of those questions, and so if we can be a place in our church communities where people can really talk honestly about how they feel about questions like that, and we can, you know, and we can help them, you know, interpret the scriptures and process their feelings at this time, help them make sense of the world, so to speak, right? If we can help people make sense of the world and help them reconnect with others, I think those are two things that the church traditionally does really well. So if we can do that at this time, we can really bring a lot of meaning into people's lives. And I think we can, expand the number of people coming to church and taking advantage of the sacraments and reclaiming their faith, right? But we need to be that place where people can come to really process their feeling and their understanding, at this time.
Yeah, amen. Imagine if those first disciples had said, well, let's just keep it to ourselves. let's not go out and spread the good news.
Yeah. Again, or if they, if they had not been able to, if they spoke a different language or didn't really understand the culture enough to really communicate it, right?
Right.
I mean, part of the issue is that they were talking to their, talking to their friends. They were talking into their culture, right? And I think that's our, that for most of us, here we are, living, working, in this culture at this time, we are the best. If we had Jesus himself, he probably wouldn't be as good of a communicator of the good news as you can be, because you're part of the culture, right?
Right.
I mean, Jesus obviously can do everything because he's God, but I'm just saying, I think we as members of the body of Christ in the Sacramento diocese at this time and all of the cities and communities we're part of, we are the best voice for the gospel, because this is our culture and we understand and we know. Again, the people if you know people and have a relationship with them, they're going to be more open to hearing what you have to say. They really are. If they see you as one of them, they're going to be more open to hearing what you have to say. So this is the time to really, and I try to process this with that people about, that God has a plan that we don't understand. I mean, we don't like that, right? We don't like to not know everything and be all knowing.
Right.
We really don't.
Well, I wonder if there are any lessons, I know it was 100 years ago, but from the pandemic of 1918, 1919, in that era, if there are any, when they did close the churches, close the schools, they closed down society in a real strict way, maybe even stricter than today. So we weren't quite as consumer-oriented society then, probably. But I wonder if there's any lessons for the church from back then. I haven't seen any, but I don't know. I mean, obviously,
a
different era for sure.
But, I know they did a lot of things outside at that time too, because they had an awareness that that would be safer. They
right.
had school outside. They did
right.
Did a lot of things outside. So when we started doing, I wrote an article about that, and then that's when we started doing a lot of stuff outside, mass and everything else outside in our diocese. And I thought, wow, it's like going back to that time. I also remember reading an article about a group. They're into, I forget what it's called, but it's a group of educators that want kids to learn outside, just the idea of having kids outside, so that if we could have school outside just as a normal thing, that would be really good for people's health, and they'd learn better, and they'd be more connections in nature.
I think I saw the same article. I think it was, in Denmark or Sweden or somewhere,
And this was...
normal, obviously weather permitting, but this was normal, and they considered, and it didn't have anything to do with COVID, but it was just considered to be so much healthier. I remember once in a great while in high school, and even a couple of times in college, where the professor or the teacher said, we're gonna meet outside today, and we were just all thrilled,
I think, we're all going to learn, hopefully in this last year we've learned more about ourselves, and we've relooked at our priorities, and And as things go back to normal, I think, you know, some of our, you know, as I was trying to say before, I think, you know, for many people, I think their behavior will change. And I think you're right. We don't want their behavior to change. Like, we don't go to church anymore. Or we just watch TV on, you know, we can always watch Mass on EWTN. Why would we ever go back? Why would we ever go back to our local parish, right? You know, or I can always find you can probably always find a better homily than your local homily on online somewhere, right? If you really wanted to, if that was your attitude. But hopefully, we realize that, you know, again, the teaching of our church is that our sacraments are communal, right? It's about the community. Right? They're not the same without the community. The community has a role in every sacrament. The assembly has a role in the Mass. It's not for the priest to do alone, or it's not for just you to do yourself. It's not you and God. It's us and God together.
Yeah, you know, I think, and I've mentioned this several times before, you know, when our son, who was 15 at the time, after we watched Mass on TV, it was a number of months ago, and we'd been doing that for a couple of months, probably 2-3 months at that point, or four, and he says, afterwards, he said, I miss going to Mass. And I think a lot of it was that community. He missed that Mass community. Not that he had necessarily friends at Mass or anything like that. It wasn't a social event for him in that way. It was just, he just missed that church community. He missed the church itself, too. You know, he missed seeing the crucifix. He missed seeing the statues. He missed he just missed the whole experience.
I think that's true for a lot of people, right? It's not the same to watch Mass sitting on your couch.
Nope.
It's just something that's just different. You know, not that you can't get some prayer out of it. Not that you can't, you know, experience the presence of Christ in some way. It's just very different.
In fact, I remember when St. John Paul II died, and they were going to have his funeral on national television, and I think it was starting at 2 a.m. our time, and I got a call from Channel 3, you know, being that I was on the radio, Catholic radio, you know, the Bishop's Hour, saying, are you going to watch the funeral? And I said, yes, I am. And we'd like to send a photographer, you know, a camera person over and a reporter and kind of watch you watch the funeral, you know. And you're like, I'm going to be sitting on my couch in the living room. And our children were much younger then. And it would have been okay or more appropriate in a church setting, you know. I mean, obviously, we want cameras to be very limited and stuff. But to think that somebody going to come into my house in the middle of the night and watch me sit on a couch and watch a funeral, it just didn't strike me to be the right, you know, forum for that. And it's the same way with watching Mass on TV. You're sitting there on the couch, or you may be kneeling in the living room, but it's just not the same.
Yeah, no, it isn't the same. And hopefully we can, hopefully it doesn't become the norm.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully, you know, and hopefully it never becomes the norm for us. You know, I just don't think it's the same thing. And it's not the intention of liturgy, right?
Well, our church is going to, you know, maybe it's, at some point we have to make a decision on live streaming. As much as you don't want to cut it off, by the same token, it's like we didn't grow up with it, and you know, I'm just not sure. You know, and obviously there are a lot of people who are still COVID at risk, and a lot of people that you know are advised to stay away from large gatherings. And, well, all of us are at this point, but you know, as things ease up, there may be a large segment of the population that have really come to rely on you know, the being able. It's nice to see your own parish on TV. I mean, it just is. It's nice to see your own priest, your own et cetera. You know, it's different. It's different for me, for sure, than say watching on EWTN. As professionally as that's all done, you know, it's it's just different. I want to see Father Ray, you know.
I do think that my sense is that, you know, we've always had that issue where you have people that can't come to church, right?
Right.
And we bring them communion, right? But I think being able to offer them a live stream mass from the local parish and bringing them communion is better ministry to them. That would be my thought. So, to me, some way of, continuing to stream one of the masses on the weekend from the parish, now that we know how easy it is to do.
Yeah, and not a big expense.
Yeah, it doesn't cost a lot of money. It's a good service to be able to see them. And then that idea that, you know, again, if you look at our Protestant brothers and sisters, they always videotape, you know, at least the preacher every week. They put it online. They have their talks at their services are usually done in a series of, you know, like they'll do a series on finances or a series on relationships or a series on whatever. I think there's some stuff we can learn from that, right? There's no reason that we couldn't do a similar thing, you know, if they lined up with the readings, right? Or, you know, like during Lent, we could focus on, you know, whatever, relationships, or we could focus on whatever, but again, I think there's some of that sharing it online is a vehicle for evangelization, but it's also a way to serve those who are shut in, those are too old or too sick to come to Mass for whatever reason.
Yeah, I can imagine a lot of people in that category saying it's about time. You know, why haven't you always been doing this? It is wonderful to have somebody bring Holy Communion by, but to actually be able to watch Mass from my home is a wonderful blessing.
I do think that's true. And then there's an opportunity, there's an opportunity for you to like, wow, I really like that homily. I know it was streamed. I can share that with a friend of mine.
Right.
That's a good thing too.
Right. I hear that about your homilies all the time.
I wish that were true, but.
Well, Deacon, always a joy to talk with you. Keep the faith, keep us going, and we'll look forward to talking again real soon.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. We'll pray for you, and please pray for me.
We sure will. God bless. Thanks so much. That's Deacon Kevin Staskow, and just does such great work. Also, the head of the Faith and Family Formation and Youth and Young Adult Ministry here at the Diocese of Sacramento. We'll take a quick break, back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society, and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Lincoln Snyder, Superintendent of Catholic Schools, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Lincoln, and thanks for all you've done to keep our great Catholic schools humming throughout this pandemic. It's been really nothing short of miraculous, and a lot of heroes there in our Catholic schools, from our principals and our teachers and all the students and everybody who keeps the schools running, all the support personnel, and, of course, the parents who have chosen to send our kids to the Catholic schools and also offer great support as the year goes along. So it's been great to see. Well, we are just pleased and honored to be joined by Deacon Jack Rowland, a therapist here in Sacramento. Deacon, good day to you. Welcome to the Bishop's Hour.
Well, thank you for having me, Bob. Yeah, I certainly appreciate it.
Awfully good to have. I was just looking at a piece about you right here in our own Catholic Herald, Hope and Healing. Deacon Jack provides faith-based counseling to clients.
Yeah. That's we've been doing that for, as the Catholic Counseling Agency. I've been doing that for decades, but as the Catholic Counseling Agency for about 15 years or so. And we get the blessing to do that a while back. And it's been it's just been grace filled for me in my life, and for all those who work with us at the agency. So, we find that there's a real need for that in the Catholic community. In fact, that's why we started it.
It's interesting that you say the Catholic Counseling Agency, and I remember I had a friend years ago and was having some marital problems and had gone to a marriage and family counselor, and he was kind of bouncing things off of me, and he said, it was all fine and good, but I got the feeling that, with all due respect, that this person was an atheist, and every time I bring up God or my faith, I'm going to rely on God, or I trust Jesus, I got the feeling that she thought it was a crutch of some kind, and so... I wasn't given much credit for this was part of me,
Absolutely. And that's what we find quite a bit. As a matter of fact, we find that our secular colleagues, I should say, in the field really see the Catholic faith as part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not part of the solution. And so very often we will have people will come to us, and so they've been to a secular counselor or a therapist, and they've been encouraged to divorce or to have an abortion or to some really tough things, and when they try to talk to about our faith, and that's not that they're conflicted, they see that guilt as a
an impediment.
A symptom of a problem, an impediment, right. And we see it, of course, as what? Beautiful reflection of God in our conscience, trying to lead us to something very special and grace-filled. And I quite frankly got a little tired of it, because I know I can't be the only Catholic therapist that's out there, and I started looking around, and I said, well, I probably wasn't far from it. So we began the agency, and we do two things. We treat the Catholic faithful and anybody who comes, because we certainly have Protestant clients, but we help them. We really help them to understand that we will always treat through a Catholic prism.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, we treat through a Catholic prism, and secondly, we train therapists in our agency to do the same. And that's probably what I've, I always get so much from my clients in watching them grow and reconnect with their faith, or, really turn to their faith, for healing and in the work that we do. And also to watch the therapists that we have, that they come in, some will come in as interns, some as already licensed professionals and start to learn how to do that. And in a setting where they don't, where you're not really having to watch what you say when it comes to faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's important for us that we're as Catholics, we're called to be people of integrity, right?
Right.
I mean, and so we're called to not only to believe, you know, our faith, but to act that out, to act out what we believe, you know, to live the gospel. And so I think that that's one of the first things, one of the first aspects of when a therapist comes on that we're looking for somebody is to, do you know your faith? Do you live your faith? Do you love your faith? And, you know, are you living that out in other aspects of your life? Because I have to tell you, if you're not walking your talk, it's a client's going to pick up on that pretty darn quickly in a small Catholic community. Half a million Catholics in our diocese, right? And everybody knows each other.
Right? Yeah, so, right.
You know, especially for somebody like you, Bob. I mean, my goodness, you know, I doubt you could walk into a restaurant without somebody knowing who you were somewhere. Right?
Yeah.
So, that goes.
I went in for knee surgery, and the nurse kept looking at me, and she kept saying, "Your voice is familiar. I don't recognize your face, but your voice is familiar."
Oh, no, for sure.
And by golly, she listened to the Bishop's Hour.
Yeah. No, you've got. I have to tell you, you probably have the most recognizable voice in our community, and so that's always. That must always be fun when you're ordering your dinner and somebody's looking at you going, "Don't I know you?
I know you?" Yeah, they don't know. I used to do a nighttime show on KFBK, and
right.
And you're in this little studio, you're all alone, and I remember one time at Christmas time, they decided that we would do the show from Macy's in their picture window there, where they usually have Santa or something, you know?
Oh, my goodness.
And then there was a session afterwards where people could come inside and chit-chat and et cetera. And this one woman came up to me, and she said, "You're not Bob Dunning." And I said, "Yes, I am." And she says, "Well, your voice is the same, but that's not what I thought you looked like." and she was clearly disappointed.
Oh, wow. Tough crowd at Christmas, let me tell you.
But, I do have to go all the way to Medford for confession if I want it to be confidential.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine. Yeah. So it's, well, you know, it's one of the things that comes up, you know, for us is that it's you know, we live in this Catholic community, right? I have to let our, you know, either my clients know, and I've seen, gosh, many, many, many hundreds of people probably in my career of the last 40 years. But I said, listen, you know, we're likely going to be kneeling down next to each other in a pew somewhere at some point.
Right, right.
Right? And sure enough, you know, it's we don't go to, you know, my wife and I, my wife Christina, we there's not a time we'll every once in a while we'll go to a different parish,
yeah,
you know, just to kind of get out and
we'll do that.
Go.
Yeah.
Sure. And that's one of the beauties about our faith is that we have so many expressions of personality in the different parishes, right?
Yeah.
And but we'll be there, and I don't even have to give her signals. She goes, "Well, so how many of ours do we have here today?" In
uh-huh.
some parish, I'll say, "Oh, about three or four."
Three or four.
You know, she'll notice somebody's kind of looking at me, and I've worked out with the clients, like, say, "Hey, listen, I won't call you out, or I won't, you
right.
know, I'll acknowledge, you know, we have confidentiality." But people are really good about that, and I just have to just let them know that, hey, listen, this is our faith. Then when I was, and that was one way, and then when I was ordained, well, now that's a whole other thing. Now I have clients commenting on my, yeah, I have a client commenting on my my homily. It's like, oh, great.
the client coming in offering you some help with your homily?
Exactly. I should tell them, hey, you should be glad you got that one for free. You have to pay for this. You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it is interesting though, because again, with all due respect that people are doing their level best to help people, that the notion that religion is a crutch or kind of a pat on the head, and well, if it works for you, you know, that's okay, you know, and I've always been of the opinion that I want someone who deals with facts, and the plain fact of the matter, whether you can, you know, it doesn't have to be proven by science to be a fact. The fact of the matter is that God exists. The fact of the matter is that Jesus Christ lived and died for our sins. Those are facts, whether anybody in society wants to recognize them or not. And so if somebody's going to try to help me but doesn't believe those things that are essential are facts, it's going to be a lot harder for them to help me. You know, maybe they can put gas in my car, okay, but when they're dealing with my heart and soul, that's going to be different.
And because what ends up happening is when we don't see that, when we don't have that understanding that, yes, there is a God, that he does exist, that he did make us, that he does love us, right? When we can't start from there, you take the possibility that the therapist or that the school of psychology that they come from become a minor God.
Right.
Like, you must do as I do or as I say, and that's really where people, we have, certainly we've, and I work with in my practice a lot, you know, the scandal that we have, and I said, well, this is, the scandal is, that's, you know, this has been happening in therapy and in counseling for generations.
Right.
Right. And so, where people are taking advantage of people,
right.
And it's that personality-based, divinity, let's just say, that people try to, enter into. So it's one of the healthiest things that we can do. It's funny, in the AA, in Alcoholics Anonymous, 12-step programs, they have a wonderful saying, if you have a big God, you have little problems. If you have a little God, you have big problems.
Oh, wow.
Right? And truly, I have to tell you that the more that we can open ourselves up spiritually, you know, not only psychologically, emotionally, physically, if you will, but spiritually, that's where the healing comes.
Yeah.
Right? Because there is nothing that a human, there's nothing that one human being that is going to say to another that God isn't going to be, that if God enters into it, if the Holy Spirit enters into it, does not become a connection, not only with that other person, but with God. And that is, in a sense, helps a person feel like, everybody wants to be loved, but not everybody feels like they're lovable, right? And that is the great, fallacy is that I'm not lovable, and therefore anybody who tries to help me must be crazy anyway.
That's
because
right.
If you try to tell me that you love me, then well, I'm not lovable. Well, now you're lying.
That's right.
Right. And that place of, so that's why when we talk about Jesus Christ, we say, well, listen, he wasn't dragging people into paradise. He was saying, hey, I'm here for you. Look, I'm going to go walk it for you.
Right.
You know, and you don't have to, put anything in up front other than to listen to me. If you see something that's there, if you hear, to follow me, right? And you will have peace and you will have joy in your life. And so very often people come and they'll say, well, I'm just not happy. I said, well, yeah. I said, if you're only if you're just looking for happiness, you're really shooting pretty low, right? I said that comes and goes with I don't know whether it be a meal, a car only stays new for so long, whatever it is, and a relationship. I said, but when you find the peace that comes with a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, right? Recognizing him where he stands in your life, well, not only do you have the opportunity, can you have his peace, but you can experience joy, which is so profoundly different than happiness, right? And I know that's probably parsing things for people, but truly, when people come for what we do, you know, they'll just be happy with the peace. And I said, well, don't stop there. Once you get that, go for the three-pointer. You know,
that relationship with Jesus Christ is never going to let you down. He's not going to call you one day and say, you know, it's not working out for me.
Exactly. You know, as a therapist, you can make mistakes, and people really start to, it's what we call it's called therapeutic intimacy, meaning they really start to, you know, put a lot of store in what it is that we bring. And I say, you know, I'm always training the interns or even the other therapists they're working with. So I'm saying, hey, be careful with that. I said, always be that place of understanding what would Christ want in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it that we find this in our faith? And very often, I really encourage not only the staff, but you know, of course, the clients to find that by reading the gospel, right? Not only reading the gospel, but in confession.
Mm-hmm.
I said, listen, at best, therapy is like is Protestant confession, right? Well, you can tell me everything that you did, but you know what? I can't absolve you from your sins. As Catholics, we have that beautiful relationship with Christ in the sacrament of reconciliation. Mm-hmm. And so people say, well, I just don't feel like I was forgiven. I said, that's why it's called a faith. You have to act as if. I said, we'll keep working on it. You keep going enough. You keep working through this, and, you know, you're going to get there. And of course, then all this expands on that our relationship with the Eucharist.
Right.
And we don't really go from one of the things I think that people find is that they'll go to, there are a lot of what are called Christian counselors out there, and we make the real delineation there. And I tell them, I said, well, you're talking about Protestant counseling. I said, yes, we're all Christians, but I said, there's a difference between Catholic and Protestant in certain issues, mm-hmm. you know, that are very, very important. One of them might be contraception. All right. That sort of thing. And so when we have couples come to us, and they have some friends who are Protestant, or they've been listening to a Protestant pastor or something like that, and we talk about our Catholic social teaching and what we believe and what is healthy. Very often, I encourage. You know, the therapist to really put forward what the Catholic teaching is of a thing,
mm-hmm.
right? And so we'll say, listen, you know, you have to, let's, and that's the difference. Protestant will say, okay, from the Bible, here's where we have it. This is Scripture. This is what it is.
Right.
We have a different understanding of how we approach that in the Catholic tradition, right? You know, certainly it's there, and it's a mainstay in who we are, but it doesn't. And when you come to direct applications, you know, we usually are able to bring people in to say, hey, well, why don't we do this? Let's take a look at what the Catechism says about it and why, and or the Catholic social teaching says about this and who we are as a people, because it will lead you back to that very clear understanding of who Christ is in our sacraments and in the life that we're called to live. And I tell people, it's not easy to be a Catholic. And I said, you know, sometimes I'll talk to people at RCI, and they're coming, and I say, wow, I really take my hat off to you.
Yeah.
Because I got to tell you, you must really be called, because this is not an easy faith to live. But when you get it, when it's there, there's just nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the RCIA, and my mom was a convert, and
Oh, great.
She was from North Dakota, and where by law you have to be Lutheran. And
yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah, you know? And she converted in nursing school. Long before I was born, she went to a Catholic nursing school, St. Alexis in Bismarck, the University of Mary, and she said those nuns had something, and I wanted it. Mm-hmm. You know, she ends up a year later meeting my dad, who was a dyed-in-the-wool Catholic. You know, it worked out fine. You know, but she said they didn't twist my arm. They lived the faith. And by example, I knew they had something I didn't have.
And they did it with joy.
Exactly.
You know, it's not that joy. You know, it's interesting. The interesting thing about joy and kind of when people are making really some really good progress in the work that they do in our agency is people start to say, hey, you know, you just seem a little more joyful. You seem a little bit more at ease. You seem like, you know, there's a kind of a shift. You know, what is that? And they don't even notice it. Yeah, it's somebody else that notices. And that's what calls people to our faith, right? That's, you know, is the joy that we have when we live it. And it's interesting you know, you should talk about that. I was just speaking with a young guy. He was telling me how he has a friend how many 17, 18-year-olds do you know that just really enjoy praying the rosary? I mean, they enjoy it. He didn't, his family didn't pray it. He just started praying it and started enjoying it. Right.
Could you help him?
Yeah. Well, I think it was kind of the other way around, to tell you the truth. I'm going, wow, I'll listen to you, you know. But that's the great thing about what we do and when they get it. And that's so when we have, you know, we work with different, we work with kids and we work with teens, we work with young adults, we work with married couples. In fact, in order to work at the agency, you have to have experience through the entire spectrum of the human experience, right?
Right.
So somebody was telling me, well, you know, if we do a lot of work with kids, why is it that we front load the younger interns with kids? I says, well, first of all, because the kids are really very, very honest and resilient, and that's where a lot of the young people are trained in graduate school. They give you, you know, they don't,
right?
You know, they put them with kids, and so kids, and so. But if you understand where a child comes from, then you understand where an adult has gotten to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
John Bradshaw. Remember that, you know, that whole movement of finding the child within and revealing the child within. And I said, you have to kind of. It's one thing to have worked with children. I said, but with adults, we can't be finding that child within and bringing that child, bring that child out, you know, and trying to heal that child, and then send a guy home, you know, as a child to his wife and kids.
Exactly.
You gotta grow him up into adulthood. It's like, you know, his wife will send him back going, no, needs more work.
Right.
So anyway, but it's been a wonderful run for us, and I think that if there is a place for people when they're really in trouble, right? When they really say, "Hey, listen, you know, I'm struggling with a particular issue, especially right now in this pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, suicide rates are up. They're up across the board for everybody. They were already up for kids. We've already had some meetings on that. Not necessarily in our agency, thank goodness. We haven't haven't had that experience too often over the years, but it doesn't take much. But it's, you know, with kids, it's up by, you know, 30-40%,
mm-hmm.
right? And after this, by the time this pandemic is somewhat under control, I'm not looking forward to seeing what some of the demographics are for some of the health issues or emotional right. health issues that we have going. But it's, you know, right now is a time for people to reach out. And, you know, it's, I would encourage people to, if they're, when they see somebody who's having a problem, right? And it can be anybody in your life. It could be your pastor. And that's a whole other thing, right? Just say, hey, you know, talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just go and, you know, it might take it, you know, you don't have to come in and do a year's worth of work, right? Just come in and spend 3 or 4 sessions just kind of working a particular issue mm-hmm. out. And really, I think it's worthwhile. One of the things that I've, in my own practice within the agency, you know, most of the time I'm doing a lot of training and supervision for the therapists, but I do a lot of work with religious,
mm-hmm.
and I have different orders around the country that I work with, and I do a lot of consulting, a lot of things going on with men and women, and that's been one of my great, I think, graces in my life, is to be able to help those who have given themselves to Christ,
mm-hmm.
wholly. You know, that and mothers of large Catholic families, they get my attention all the time.
Well, yes, indeed, yes. Yeah, my mom was one of those.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
Well, we had five total. And,
well, that'll do it.
That'll do it. I have six now of my own.
Well, yeah, I've heard you. You've done a great job of starting a family, and that's fantastic. You're my hero, actually.
Oh, when
you tell me about your personal story, I was going, wow, this guy. You know, I got to get to know this guy. He's got something special.
You're too kind. Well, when we can talk without masks, we ought to have lunch together.
Sounds good to me.
That would be
Look
good.
Look forward to it.
Deacon, we're flat out of time. We barely scratched the surface. I sure hope we can get you back soon.
Be more than happy to. Anything I can do to be of help to the Catholic community, you know I'm there.
That would be great. It's Deacon Jack Rowland, the Catholic Counseling Agency in Fair Oaks.
Yes. So, you know, my number is out there. And if anybody needs anything, just give a call.
You can give the number
staff.
If you want to.
Sure. I'll give you my direct number.
All right.
For somebody if they want to call. It's 916-847-9052.
Very good.
All right. And cool. That is, and they can talk with me directly, especially since they heard me on the radio or they saw that, and we have other numbers for the agencies, but this is the best way to get a hold of me directly, and sometimes that's what people want.
Very
I'm there.
Good. Well, we'll look forward to talking to you soon, and God's blessings to you and your family and everybody there at the agency, and we'd like to thank all the keep the faith.
Okay.
Hey, thanks
so
much.
Thank you for your ministry.
Yeah.
All right,
no, thank
Bob.
You. Take care.
Okay.
That's Deacon Jack Rowland from the Catholic Counseling Agency in Fair Oaks. Great man, doing a lot of great work. Well, that's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showing that God is love and God is just.